So we've been following Jesus for a couple months now. All right, we started with his family, with Mary and Joseph, with Elizabeth and Zechariah. We watched as their hard news was transformed into good news, how Jesus' lowly birth kind of gave way to a ministry that everyone could feel a part of. Then we caught a couple snapshots from Jesus' childhood, but like it is with our own kids, it seemed like it was overnight and he was a grown adult. We watched him prepare for his ministry in the wilderness, right, as he was tempted to take shortcuts, to put on a show. We caught up with him when he returned to his hometown synagogue, right, the church he grew up in. When he stood to read, he crushed the sermon. But when the words got a little too close to home, the congregation tried to drive him off a cliff. Last week, the religious leaders of the day called out Jesus and his disciples for eating and drinking too much. They thought Jesus' disciples should fast more, should pray more, should stop hanging out with tax collectors and sinners. And while Jesus was not opposed to fasting and praying, he was opposed to judgmental folk telling his disciples what they should be doing. And so today we keep reading. We're going to check back in with him and his disciples. And as we said last week, just because Jesus didn't demand his disciples pray and fast more doesn't mean that he didn't value those spiritual disciplines. And so, as this story picks up, as we check back in, it begins with Jesus spending the entire night in prayer. Let's read this together. This is from Luke chapter 6, starting in verse 12. During those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray, and he spent the night praying to God. When morning came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he also designated apostles. Simon, who he named Peter, his brother Andrew, James, John, Philip, Bartholomew. The comma was missing there. They're not all his brothers, just Andrew. John, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, son of Alphaeus, Simon, who was called the Zealot, Judas, the son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor. He went down with them and stood on a level place. A large crowd of his disciples was there, and a great number of people from all over Judea, from Jerusalem and from the coastal regions around Tyre and Sidon. They had come to hear him and to be healed of their diseases. Those troubled by impure spirits were cured, and the people all tried to touch Jesus because power was coming from him and healing them. Then, looking at his disciples, Jesus said, and we're going to pause there for a second, because everything he's about to say is referred to as the Sermon on the Plain. Raise your hand if you've ever heard of the Sermon on the Mount. It's most of you, right? Yeah, it's Matthew chapter 5, 6, and 7. They're referred to the Sermon on the Mount because Jesus is said to have delivered them while standing on the side of a mountain. As we just read, on this occasion, Jesus went down and stood on a level place, a plain, and began to speak, teach. He delivered the Sermon on the Plain. Now, you may have seen the sermon title in the bulletin and are wondering what sort of play of words I might be doing with the word plain, P-L-A-N-E. It's just a typo. It's a complete typo. I'm really excited to have an office administrator starting again on Tuesday to help make me look good and smart. Just a typo. So, here's the deal. I'm going to pause throughout, but this morning, I'm going to read the entire sermon on the plain. And I don't want you to hear this morning's passage as an interpretive puzzle to be solved or like a dry reading of an ancient text. I want you to hear it as if it was a sermon, right? As if what mattered just as much was what you're thinking and feeling while hearing the words and what the words are actually saying at times. And so, as odd as it might feel, try with me to imagine yourself there with a crowd of people about to hear Jesus preach. You're going to have to work with me on this one, get comfortable, take a couple deep breaths, step away from all the thoughts that are surrounding today and see if you can transport yourself to that dusty plain where everyone's gathered. People are chatty, right? There's a buzz in the air. You're not sure if you believe all the miraculous stories you've been hearing, but it doesn't really matter because today you're finally going to get to see the guy that everybody's been talking about, Jesus. And so with elbows out, you squeeze through the crowd, manage to snag a spot where you can actually see him. And it's like, huh, that's Jesus. He doesn't look like much. He's a regular guy, really. But the more you stare at him, the more you can tell that there is something different about him. Maybe it's the way he carries himself with just this calm confidence, or maybe it's the fact that there are hundreds, maybe even thousands of faces glued to him, right? There's a magnetism of sorts. And then he begins talking. It's like someone flipped a switch and things got really quiet. Everyone's hanging on to every one of his words, and his words, they're the kind of words that hit you in the gut and give you a hug at the same time. He says, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who hunger now, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you, when they exclude you and insult you and reject your name as evil because of the Son of Man. Rejoice in that day and leap for joy, because great is your reward in heaven. For that's how the ancestors treated the prophets." What a way to begin a sermon. The poor and the hungry, those who just can't stop weeping, they often feel excluded in big moments like this, but Jesus starts with them, blesses them. It didn't seem to matter who you were, where you found yourself on life's journey. Jesus starts off by welcoming everyone. His words, they hang in the air, and somehow they make it across the plain. He spoke about the pain of hunger and poverty as if he knew them himself. But you can tell he's talking about something bigger, something deeper, and his words get stronger. "But woe to you who are rich, for you've already received your comfort. Woe to you who are well fed now, for you will go hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you will mourn and weep. Woe to you when everyone speaks well of you, for that's how the ancestors treated the false prophets." You're not sure if he's talking about you or talking about those people, right, over there. His words hit close enough to home that they get your attention, but somehow his tone isn't judgmental. Sounds more like a good friend trying to warn you of the trappings of the material world, of seeking gratification while others suffer. And he doesn't slow down or stop there. With each beat of his voice, Jesus dives deeper into the human condition and this call for radical love. He says, "Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. If someone slaps you on one cheek, turn to them the other also. If someone takes your coat, do not withhold your shirt from them. Give to everyone who asks you. And if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be children of the Most High, because He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Wow. All right, love your enemies. Pray for those who mistreat you. Lend without expecting repayment. That's some radical stuff. Stuff that makes you squirm in your seat a little bit. And you can tell that everyone's feeling the challenge of his words. You're not sure that giving, right, without expecting to receive is very practical, but at the same time, there's something freeing about it. It's an invitation to let go the resentment and bitterness you've been carrying around. And then with a tenderness that's oddly contrasted with the strength of his conviction, Jesus keeps going. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be poured into your lap, for with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. His words are so much different than maybe the words you grew up in. There isn't a long list of things you have to do, prayers you have to pray, plates you have to pass to get right with God. Just forgive and you'll be forgiven. Do not judge and you will not be judged. It's just so simple and yet so hard. Right? His words offer immense comfort to those who know the sting of being judged, being told they're not welcome, they're not enough, and they serve as one heck of a challenge for those who are used to always being right. And Jesus continues. Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall in a pit? The student is not above the teacher, but everyone who is fully trained will be like their teacher. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in a brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Brother, let me take the speck out of your eye," when you yourself fail to see the plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. I don't know about you, but this one, it feels like he's talking to me. At the image of a plank in my eye, a splinter in another's eye, it's a funny, cartoonish image, and yet it's kind of a painful one. Can you feel the weight of a plank in your eye? I can. You know the growing sense of embarrassment because of the many times you found yourself pointing at other people? I sure do. But the sermon isn't over yet. Jesus continues. No good tree bears bad fruit, nor does a bad tree bear good fruit. Each tree is recognized by its own fruit. People do not pick figs from thorn bushes or grapes from briars. A good person brings good out of the goodness stored up in their heart. And an evil person brings evil things out of the evil stored up in their heart. For the mouth speaks what the heart is full of. And you're trying to take in every word of Jesus' sermon, but it's hard to keep up because it's one deep spiritual image after another. On the one hand, it's nothing new, but on the other hand, it's like nothing you've heard before. Right? The mouth speaks what the heart is full of. It's so good. That makes you want to give your heart some attention. And then Jesus begins to draw his sermon to a close. You're still processing his words, how you might actually apply some of this to your life. And then he goes there. He says, "Why do you call me Lord, Lord, and then not do what I say? As for everyone who comes to me and hears my words and puts them into practice, I'll show you what they will be like. They're like a person building a house who dug down deep and laid the foundation on rocks. When a flood came, the torrent struck that house but could not shake it because it was well built. But the one who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a person who built a house on the ground without a foundation. The moment the torrent struck that house, it collapsed and destruction was complete." And when Jesus had finished saying all of this to the people who were listening, he entered Capernaum. That, my friends, is the Sermon on the Plain. And just like that, the sermon was over. And I don't know about you, but listening to Jesus speak, hearing his words without all the stuff attached to it, it can be eye-opening. It's like seeing the world in a whole new way and knowing at the same time that you can take this spiritual life, this spiritual journey, so much further. And so I want to leave you this morning with just a simple encouragement to take something out of Jesus' words and give it a shot. Just try doing it. Did something grab you from the Sermon on the Plain? The call to love, the challenge to give without expecting anything in return, the shift from judgment to grace, from resentment to forgiveness. Was there anything that stood out to you? If you have a Bible at home, I encourage you to read the Sermon on a Plain a time or two this week. One of my seminary professors always told us, read it again, then read it slowly, and then you could try rereading it. Search it for something that you could actually try doing this week. If you want to be that unshakable house that can handle whatever is thrown at you, give the Sermon on the Plain a real try. Who knows, within Jesus' words, there might be that next foundational practice that will take you deeper, further, fuller into yourself, into God, into this world that surrounds us. If you don't have a Bible at home, you don't have to sign up for the next fourth grade program. I've got a stack of them on the table right outside the sanctuary. And so if you want one, grab one. It's a gift. Friends, next week we are going to read stories of Jesus sharing meals with some unlikely characters. And we're going to celebrate our first Everyone Communion Sunday. Young and old alike, we are going to read about the radical hospitality of Jesus at the table. Until then, be well, be blessed, enjoy some pancakes. Amen.